Before we get into our coverage of Short Treks today with Jessica Leese, I want to take a moment and thank our sponsors over at Uncle Bud's.
Make it a hemp healthy day. Uncle Bud's way, it works.
Hemp oil is all the buzz right now, but not the buzz that you're thinking. Got pain, sore muscles, dry skin? Well, Uncle Bud's Hemp has a natural solution to you. Uncle Bud's brings the miracle of hemp oil to life with a natural collection of hemp-infused pain relief, skincare, and personal care products. Uncle Bud's has officially made hemp oil affordable and accessible to everyone. Just head on over to your local Walmart or GNC store and look for the giant hemp leaf in the natural section. You're going to find Uncle Bud's assortment of hemp healthy products. Add Uncle Bud's products to your daily routine. Just go to UncleBudsHemp.com to find that Walmart or GNC store near you, and you can learn more about the benefits and uses of hemp oil. And as an added bonus, we are going to be giving away some product at random to 30 of our listeners who already love Uncle Bud's Hemp or plan on buying Uncle Bud's Hemp products. That's right. Well, how do you enter? All you have to do is send a photo with the product or a one-liner on Twitter telling why you love the product. Just include the hashtag Uncle Bud's, all one word, hashtag Uncle Bud's, to be eligible for the product.
Make it a hemp healthy day, the Uncle Bud's way, it works.
Star Trek Discovery Short Treks. Episode 1, Runaway, is over, but we are just getting started here at Post Show Recaps. My name is Jessica Leese, and in this lull between Seasons 1 and 2 of Star Trek Discovery, we are here to break down everything that happened in these 15-minute online-only minisodes, so that you don't have to watch them, or if you have watched them, we can talk you through that and give you our takes on them as well. With me, as always, is my XO, Mr. Rob Cesternino,
yes,
who's here to talk about everything that happened with this 15 minutes of something.
Yes. Consider me the ice cream treat here as we talk about Runaway, the first short trek. I'd say, you know, short trek. I heard that. I was like, oh, they'll be like 3 minutes. They weren't that short.
You were thinking about the like Walking Dead commercial interstitials, and this was not that.
Yes. But I know these were really fun.
Yeah, they're definitely fun. Although if you start to go too far down the fourth wall rabbit hole, you start to think about, well, this was probably somebody brought this into the writer's room and everybody decided it wasn't strong enough to make a real episode.
Yeah, this was like on the whiteboard of season two ideas. Like, not enough here.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, who can we get to be the person in the crew? Like, who's not busy right now who can knock this off of their plate?
Yeah.
And so let's go ahead and talk about this first episode, Rob. In my opinion, I thought this was the weakest of the three that we've seen so far. But I'd really love to get your take on this. How do you feel about this sort of irreverent look at life aboard Discovery?
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's fun, and I feel like that in a different Star Trek series, I do kind of like it where we get to see sort of like a slice of life type episodes. And I think that we can do things here in the short trek format that if we, you know, spent a day with Tilly, I do think that if this was like an episode, I would say like, okay, well, why are we spending so much time with this? Let's cut to the chase. Let's get to the action. But I do like that it's a little bit more of like exploring the day-to-day life of the different characters that we see.
Yeah, one of my all-time favorite episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation is the one called Lower Decks, where we don't really get any of the main cast, and it's all of these kind of red shirts that...
Who's it? Ensign Roe? Keiko?
Yeah, it was all these like kind of B-list characters and some people you never saw again. And it was just like, okay, while Picard is out doing, you know, saving the universe from a giant spaceship that thinks it's God or whatever's happening this week. We got the people below deck that are actually like keeping everything running so that he can do that. And that makes for a compelling story. And I do think there are so many stories that we don't get in the Star Trek universe that we end up getting these little snippets of what it's like to just kind of be a lower ranking person going about your life on the spaceship. I think that can be very compelling.
You know, I think I'm getting this confused with the episode where I think Picard got turned into a kid. It's they call that one. I think it's a reverse big. And I think that maybe that's where Keiko and Ensign Ro came in. I don't think that they were part of the core four from the Star Trek Next Generation Lower Decks episode.
No, it was I think the only one I remember that you ever saw again was the nurse from the sick bay.
I have it open.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just do you know why now? Why Short Treks here? I know that is this just the first hiatus between Star Trek Discovery seasons?
Yeah, I think there's two things at play here. I think it's the first hiatus, and it's also this is the first time we've had a Star Trek series in the age of streaming where we can have things be as long as they need to be. Mm-hmm. And we can drop some little pieces of content that don't have to be full length episodes that fit a TV schedule. So that's what I think. They just decided we'll give these people a little taste of what's to come. And you might be missing the cast, which I didn't realize I was until I started watching these.
Yeah, it was fun. When was the end of Star Trek Discovery season one? Was that like January, February of 2018?
That was a long time ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, because I feel like there was a fall season. And then I think then there was one a second season that started like at the start of the year. So it's been almost a year since we've seen Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah. I think it was ran January, February, because as I recall, I was getting caught up with it over the Christmas break.
Yeah. And I think we thought that it was going to come back in the fall like the first season did.
Yep. And unfortunately, it did not. But they have this to tide us over. And so let's get right into it, because I'm really interested to hear your take on a couple of key questions that came up for me. Chief among them is, why is Tilly all by herself in this? Apart from they couldn't get anybody else in the cast to be in this episode. Like, where is everybody?
It's a good question. That is this in the, not to spoil the second episode, but is this sort of in the same timeline where everybody's off the ship coming up in the Calypso episode? No, I don't know. And why is Tilly so stressed out that she's drinking quadruple espressos?
Yeah, and why does the replicator feel the need to editorialize on her drink order?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember in Star Trek canon that do people drink coffee for the caffeine? Like when Picard is drinking Earl Grey tea, is that to stay awake on these shifts?
Well, in Deep Space Nine, they drank Ractogeno a lot, and I think it was for the same reason. Mm-hmm. But Earth coffee is apparently Bush League compared to Ractogeno, and everybody was just like, yeah, I'm just going to drink the Klingon Cracked stuff out. Because it works better. Yeah. But the replicator had nothing to say about this. The replicator was just like, eh, yeah. I don't know. It's your life. You do you, boo.
But what was going on with Tilly? Why was she facing so much stress that she needed to stay up all night?
I think that Tilly's deal is that she's in that officer training program, which everybody in her home life apparently thinks is a very bad idea. But apparently this is on top of her regular duties. And so she's very stressed out because she's trying to impress Starfleet, I guess.
And when do these episodes happen within the Discovery timeline? I have to feel like, you know, the third episode of the Short Treks seems to be entirely told in the past. The second one is in the future. I don't feel like that this is in the present of where we are. I don't think that this is sometime in season two. So I'm confused.
I disagree. I think this is probably meant to be between seasons one and two, at least, because she is doing the officer training. And we know that a lot of her path to going on this officer training thing happened over the course of season one. And so she's an established member of the crew at this point, and she would be staying up all night stressing out over these things. I think that we are meant to believe this is the present, and then the next ones are like, you know, Christmas past and Christmas future.
But didn't we leave things off on like a very specific cliffhanger with the Enterprise showing up at the end of season one? I have to feel like it's either before that happened or sometime after that happened.
Yeah, it could be either one. I think these short treks are meant to be outside of the timeline so that you don't have to be caught up. Like, you could certainly watch this without even knowing what's going on in the Star Trek Discovery timeline. Like, you can watch this before you even start watching season one.
Mm-hmm. My second question, Jess, is that are these events canon?
Well, what happens if they're not? And what happens if they are?
I don't know. I mean, the second one we'll talk about, that's the one that I feel like is the most problematic if it's canon. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know if these are just sort of, are these just for fun, or are these, you know, really, are we setting things up that will be referenced in other episodes? Where I thought that 24 had like webisodes where I think it was canon. I think that like things were set up or explained in the webisodes that did have some sort of ramifications, or that they were referenced in other things.
Yeah. And obviously Fear the Walking Dead had when they did the whole set of webisodes on the plane, they ended up leading up to a character showing up for one episode on actual Fear the Walking Dead for some reason.
And one episode of The Talking Dead.
Yes. One episode of Talking Dead. And then, of course, the real star of Walking Dead Prime, Red Machete.
Red Machete, I believe, is also off to go make a series of films on AMC. So be on the lookout for the Red Machete.
Oh, I can't wait for that one. That's going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't believe that these are necessarily anything you need to watch to be fully versed in the canon of the show. But neither do I think that they contain anything that's going to be problematic in like the whole narrative arc.
Okay, nothing that we need to quarantine here.
No, nothing that we need to, you know, we don't need to take it offline to debug it.
No decontamination zone needed.
Right. It didn't throw any food at us. Really, the actual story here, I don't think is much to write home about. This is a story we've seen, I think, in every series of Star Trek up to this point. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. That there is a an alien that ends up having some sort of a relationship or friendship with a member of our crew. And through an understanding of that relationship, I guess we learn something new about that species and ultimately about ourselves.
Yeah, basically. And then I think there have been more than one episode where the new alien friend inspires the crew member to do something that's a little bit unkosher. Like, not, sometimes it's not how Starfleet would normally do things, and sometimes it's not how that crew member themselves would do things. There's a really early Deep Space Nine episode where O'Brien meets a member of a species who's being hunted, and he wants to escape Deep Space Nine and go back out and be hunted and meet his heroic death. And Starfleet's like, no, you have to stay here. And O'Brien helps him escape so he can be hunted.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know necessarily how Tilly is avoiding any sort of disciplinary action from her actions here in this episode. I feel like that she's violating the Starfleet protocol quite a bit here in this episode.
Yeah, well, and how did Picard not ever get court-martialed for all the times he violated the Prime Directive, huh? I mean, we play fast and loose with the rules in Star Trek. That's just how they really do.
I mean, I feel like that Starfleet is no way to necessarily run an organization. It seems like that very much there's a lot of bending of the rules.
Yeah, but it's pretty blatant here with Tilly, like, just randomly being able to sneak down and beam people away from the ship. That seems like you should have a tighter lock on whether or not you can beam people off the ship.
Right. Because there is an alien life form. I mean, we're going through the process of having a decontamination protocol on board. You would think that this would be a major problem. I mean, we've seen time and time again on Star Trek where, you know, you can, you know, introduce some pathogen and it could be a big problem for everybody. Tilly, as a scientist, should know this. And she ends up, you know, meeting this alien who has snuck onto the ship. And then she's like, OK, all right, I won't say anything to anybody. And this should at least be yellow alert right now.
Yeah. And I could see, like, from the way Tilly is written and from how, like, socially weird she is, I guess I could see her being the character that would be the most likely to behave like this. Like, it's not out of character for her, but it's also like, to your point, she's a scientist and she just got bled on by a species she doesn't know.
Right.
She should be freaking out.
If I got bled on by a species I do know, I think I'd be a lot more alarmed than Tilly.
Yeah, if it's my species, I'm going to be weirded out by getting bled on.
Right. Now, when Tilly she's ordering, you know, a quadruple espresso against the better judgment of the replicator, is that just sort of set up? Like, is she like, am I hallucinating? Am I high on all of this caffeine that I'm tripping out right now? So let me not, you know, alert anybody because they'll just think I'm being crazy.
I think that must be it. And especially when the replicator starts freaking out, it's kind of the same thing. Like, who's going to believe me here when the replicators just kind of go haywire and start flinging food everywhere? Like, it's also, is she hallucinating that for a second? You're not sure if that's really what's happening or not until like the food is everywhere.
Yeah. And this thing takes a lot of different turns, Jess, that we end up seeing that this alien creature who can kind of like turn invisible and do all sorts of different things is also a kid. We find out later is also the queen of her planet. She's a scientist. So many surprises.
It's a lot. It feels like fan fiction at that point. When you get to the point where anybody is royalty of a planet, I feel like you have crossed into some fan fiction territory.
Mm-hmm, certainly.
And it's like, she's the most special and all she needed was to like hook up with one of the characters. Like, she should have gone off and like had a fling with the most attractive male crew member just to complete the set.
I'm at a loss. Who is our most attractive male crew member at this point?
Boy, it's a good question. Who's even available?
I'm not sure. It's been a long off season from Discovery.
It certainly Spock? Hasn't. Yeah, I mean, all of the best early fan fiction, like back when fan fiction was being invented, all of it involved Spock.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All of the best fan fiction.
Arguably, it still does. She's so attractive and perfect and the queen of her planet that Spock goes into Ponfar spontaneously.
But she's also a miner, perhaps, on her planet. So we don't know.
No. She's an engineer. She invented.
No, I think she's like 17, I think.
Yeah, she's 17 years old. She's the queen of her planet, and she invented technology that could change the fabric of the universe. And this is like, there's some actual Star Trek canon behind this dilithium crystal thing, but I have to admit, I do not fully understand it myself.
Yeah, I was a little lost as well, Jess, with the dilithium incubator, which she invented. And I was like, oh, is this good for the planet or is this bad for the planet? And that she has this symbiotic relationship that the planet is her twin. And I don't even know what she was talking about.
It sounded to me like maybe they had a handle on mining and technology, but perhaps didn't really understand evolution.
Is that possible? I mean, why was she able to turn invisible? Is that based on like the people from her planet can do that or she invented that?
I think that's something that people from lots of planets can do. Like, that's not a super weird thing in the universe, but I don't know. They didn't really explain that either. It's just like, oh no, she's beautiful and a genius and she invented things and she's a queen and she can also turn herself invisible. I want to know, like, whose 17-year-old niece submitted this script to the writer's room.
Yeah, it ultimately took on some sort of a environmental message by the end. We go a lot of different places talking through Runaway.
It is a roller coaster ride. It is that. And really, it is a rehash of a plot we've seen on Star Trek many times before. And I think that the actors here do a fine job with it, but it really, I'm so glad we didn't get this as a real episode, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah. At the end of the episode, just when Tilly beams her somewhere, did you get a clear answer? Where was she beaming her to?
I think she was beaming her back to the planet so that she could be the queen.
Are they in orbit of her planet?
I guess, like, or maybe she thought she was beaming her back to the planet and just beamed her into space where she died.
I don't know. It seems like, wait, they're like, oh, wait, you're from what planet? Oh, wait, hold on. Let me Google that. Hold on. Let me check in. Like, please, I need all of the information we have about people that the Zaheen people. It didn't seem like that they happened to be in orbit of the Zaheen planet.
Well, if everybody's asleep, maybe Tilly just steered the ship back that direction.
Yeah.
I don't really know, because it does seem like they're presupposing a lot about warp technology and about beaming people down that I think transporters did not really work that way in that particular time period. But definitely I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah. Okay. The queen is going back now, Jess. And so do you think that the queen is going to continue her rule?
Are you asking, does the queen stay queen?
Well, she was about to become the queen. Her brother was the king.
Right. And her brother,
her parents.
Yes. Her brother died and her parents died and it was all very tragic. And now she is the queen. I assume that when she is beamed back to the planet, and we assume that worked correctly, she's going to take up the mantle of being the queen. And that was kind of when she accepts being beamed down, that's what she's accepting.
Yeah, because it's kind of like a runaway bride type story where it's like she has cold feet and she's like, I can't do this. And so she just runs off. But then Tilly talks her into going back, getting hitched to her planet.
P.S. I'm pretty sure that we've seen that episode in Star Trek as well.
Well, there's a lot of Star Trek and there's only so many ideas.
I guess so.
Jess, do you hope that there will be a follow up where we get to see Tilly going to visit the Zaheen planet?
I suspect we could run out of ideas in a season or two and we'll have a whole episode around the Zaheen people.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, Star Trek Discovery thus far has not been as episodic as Next Generation was, for instance. And so we don't really get those moments, with very few exceptions so far. We don't really get those moments where they're going to just go to a place for one episode and stay there and explore that universe and then be done with it at the end. So we could work it into an arc at some point, maybe. But I think this might be one and done.
Yeah. The Zaheen, Jess, she was like a savage, but she was also a scientist. That seemed off to me.
Yeah, I think we're supposed to understand that technology moves at different speeds for different people, which is a theme that I think recurs throughout the first three of these short treks, if we really want to dig deep into it.
Oh, there's a theme?
I think the theme of people... you can't assume that a society will be on the same page as you on everything all the time. I think that's something that gets explored, at least in the third short trek, where we have a agrarian society that barely has electricity, but that can randomly, spoiler alert, go up and join Starfleet. We'll get there. I think it's kind of the same thing. It's like, maybe on some level they seem like they're savages, but they really have a deeper understanding of many things.
Right. Like they have mastered dilithium mining and dilithium incubation, but not sugar.
Yeah, it's like if you're playing Civilization and you master ceremonial burial, but you also haven't invented the wheel yet.
Is this a video game?
You never played Civ, Rob?
No, Civ.
Come on. We are the same age. I barely played this. And this was like,
what is it?
It's a mid-90s PC game, and I believe it's still going strong, and it's where you create a civilization and your people unlock all the different secrets.
SimCity?
It's very similar to SimCity, actually. Okay. I think they might even be like in the same family. We're going to get a comment on our page on postshowrecaps.com that's going to be like 500 words about the history of Civ, but
don't add us.
They're going to add us, Rob. That train has already left the station because railroad technology is something these people have mastered. They do have the railroad. But yeah, and you could get to a point where like your knowledge of literature is in the 15th century, but you have space travel.
Okay.
This is something that could happen in that universe. And I think it's something that we're meant to believe could also be true of various civilizations. I think the moral of the short treks is it takes all kinds.
It takes all kinds. Jess, can we give some sort of a rating system to the short treks, like our scale of warp factor 1 to warp factor 10?
Yeah, or do we want to rate it on number of espressos?
Okay, that's fine. So 1 to 4 espressos?
Yeah, on a scale of 1 to 4 espressos, how many? 4 is the best espressos.
Because Replicator says 4 is, that's way too much.
I think you know it's the best because the Replicator doesn't want you to have it.
Okay. 1 to 4 espressos. All right. Should I go first?
Yes, you go first. How many espressos do you give this?
I give it 2. I mean, it was fun. I don't think I would watch it again. I was intrigued. I felt like that there was a couple things that were kind of off the wall. And I said, okay, I'll go with it. Not a real episode. And so first one back. So I might be the weakest. I'll give it 2.
Yeah, that's about where I'm at with it as well. I mean, Tilly is one of my favorite characters. She's always a joy to see more of. I think the more Tilly, the merrier. But I also thought this was a pretty weak plot. And I really don't see a need to revisit any aspect of this again.
Yeah.
So I think our average here, we are averaging 2 espressos for this.
All right. 2 espressos.
Yep. Put in the books. So I think, do you have anything else you want to add about short trek number 1?
Yeah, I liked it when the replicator was going crazy because the girl was Poe was like making everything come out of the replicator and like throwing it around the room. And then I liked it when like a bunch of other people came in and, Poe was like, oh, don't say anything. Don't tell them about me. And then Tilly lied to cover for everybody or for Poe. And then just told everybody that she had like a feral rabbit that just destroyed the mess hall.
Yeah, that's a concern. People should be worried about that, too, if they're quarantining the ship and they need to decontaminate things. People having random animals aboard the ship is a bigger problem.
Right. I'm sorry. Did you say feral rabbit? Computer, go to yellow alert.
Yeah,
like feral rabbit.
Everybody gets like weird bunny fever from that.
Yeah.
And people should be dropping dead of disease way more often than they do.
Right. I mean, Tilly, with all due respect, deserves a court martial after this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding.
I mean, command track.
Yeah, she should at least get kicked out of command track for that.
Yeah. Can't follow orders.
Yeah. Or maybe she'll just blame the espresso.
Yeah, so like, guys, I had drank a quadruple espresso. First time in Starfleet history that has been done. Okay. Cut me some slack.
Yeah. Is that why the replicator was so upset? Because nobody had ever done it before?
Yes, this replicator is clearly broken. It gave me a quadruple espresso. Everybody knows you should not drink that.
So then the replicator gets court-martialed, and that's how we get people like Neelix.
Yes, guys, the replicator is clearly broken. Look what it did.
Yeah, it's the replicator's fault.
Yeah, blame technology.
Yeah, I mean, I always do. It works well in the 21st century. Why wouldn't it work in the 24th?
I think Tilly's onto something.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Rob. So I guess we can go ahead and put a bow on this one. We can call it dessert. And Rob and I will be coming at you with short recaps of the short treks all the way up until the premiere of Star Trek Discovery, when we will be coming at you early in the week. I think these drop on Sunday or Monday night. Don't at me. I'm sure you know.
I mean, that's what they were last season, but who knows if that's going to be the same schedule this season.
I mean, my impression is it's going to be similar. And so after they drop, we'll watch them a few days later. You'll get the podcast. You guys know the drill.
Mm-hmm. I'm very excited to talk about the next one, Jess.
Me too. I think there's a lot more to unpack here, and I think a lot more allusions to other popular cultures. So with all that in mind, we'll see you for episode 2.
Special thanks to our friends over at True Car for sponsoring this episode of Post Show Recaps. Every car comes with its share of stories, that ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up your first date, that luxury package that you might have gotten after that big promotion, or the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer. While you can't put a price tag on your stories now with True Car, you can at least find out what your car is worth when it's time to sell it or trade it in. Just go to True Car and simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Then just answer a few questions. Navigation and moonroof, watch as they bump up your value. High mileage, you already knew it was going to cost you, but now you know how much it's going to ding your wallet so you can plan ahead. And once you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent in minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash out or to trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade your car, check out True Car today. True Cash offer not available in all areas.